This week's Pilch Point with Avram Pilch is proudly powered by PureVPN. The best way to protect your privacy online is with PureVPN. You can hide your online activities, say goodbye to regional restrictions, and improve your streaming quality. Plus, it's available for almost all of your devices. You can get a special price and a 31-day money-back guarantee right now by going to pilchpoint.live/purevpn. Still loving that music. Anyway, what have you got for us tonight, Avram?
So I'm going to give you a, like when kids are in school and they're like, what did you do for your summer vacation? Or what did you do for your winter vacation? I'm going to show you my pictures from a very special outing that I had yesterday and ask how much you know about all of these things that I'm going to show you. So my son, who just had his 12th birthday, and I went to the Vintage Computer Festival East, an annual event in New Jersey, where they have people come and bring like all kinds of old computers and show them off and do exhibits. They sell kind of retro kits. They have people selling old stuff. They have presentations and talks. They have classes on how to do certain things. We got to go only for one of the 3 days. And unfortunately, the classes that we wanted to go to were signed up because we didn't get there early enough to put our name on the list to do Atari Basic or Atari Assembler, which is what he wanted to learn, which is kind of funny because we looked in the room, we looked that there was no room on the list, and my son got upset and he's like, oh no, I'll never learn Atari Assembler. That's something that'll know that has never been said before. So I want to show you some of these pictures that we took, and see how many of these things you and those in the audience remember using or can identify. And some of these have some really fantastic stories behind them that I did not know before. So I learned some things, as you would hope to learn something at an event like this. So let's see, I'm sharing my screen here. So this first picture is from the museum portion. I should note that if folks live in New Jersey or near New Jersey, the museum area where they had this, which is called Info Age in Wall Township, has a permanent computer museum. And, in addition to the festival. So this picture actually is from the permanent museum collection. It shows Moore's Law, and it shows a bunch of, 8086 CPUs. One thing, some of these I have owned. Which of these have you used, Scott?
So I'm looking in at what's in here. So, 8086, 286, 386, 486. I've had all of those. I still have at least one of each.
That is certainly a message of the show, is that don't throw your things away.
Yeah. Yeah. There's definitely a little bit of a pack rat mentality to my collecting, but there's also some, there's cool stuff, right, from the past that has kind of disappeared into history. So I'm glad that, there's something like this. It's something that I want to do as well. I think we've talked about it on the show. My goal is to have a bit of a computer history museum, and I think we're going to incorporate that into the Forge once we're in our own space, which is kind of cool to finally be able to start doing that. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of stuff in there that, I mean, I even actively have, most of which still powers on.
So I found this interesting. This is the first, I think this is the first AMD x86 chip, the 286 AMD. So That was kind of cool. So this here is a Xerox Star 8010. Yeah, it is. You'll notice it has a UI, like a GUI. This is a Xerox computer that I think was primarily made for business, but it had its own user interface that looks quite like the Mac. Astute computer historians will know that the Macintosh GUI was based on a Xerox GUI that was developed in the 70s at the Xerox Park Research Center. And of course, we all love the mouse, which has these wacky buttons, right? This here is the PC Junior. The really disappointing younger brother of the IBM PC that was made for a more sort of family and education audience, but wasn't fully PC compatible and had this terrible mushy keyboard, but it did take cartridges. So it had the basic cartridge on there. This here is one something I hadn't seen before, a TI branded luggable, luggable being one of those type of computers that it was portable, but it still weighed like 40 pounds. Mm-hmm.
This
one had two disk drives. We saw a lot of luggables there.
I have the compact equivalent of it. Looks exactly the same.
That's an enough. I have another picture of the compact. Excellent. So here's my son Isaac playing with an original Commodore PET. Indeed. For those who don't know, the PET was Commodore's first computer, certainly the first major personal computer. It came out, the same time as or before the Apple II.
Yep, 1977.
Yeah, wasn't that about the same year as the Apple II?
It was, in fact. It was part of what was referred to as the 1977 Trinity. It was the PET, the Apple II, and the TRS-80 were all 77.
Yeah. So one thing that surprised me about this PET, newer PETs than that had like a really full keyboard, but this one has this really small keyboard here that's kind of annoying looking, very not good for touch typing. So this here, wait till the screen shifts. This is a hobbyist computer called the Cosmac.
That was the 2001, right? With the weird little keyboard? The PET?
Yes.
Yeah.
Weird little keyboard. The original PET had the little keyboard and then they had like a bigger keyboard on, I think, the subsequent PETs. So here, this is a Cosmac VIP, which was a popular hobbyist board. They were actually selling somebody was showing off replicas of this that people now program today. But this is an original one. This here, I love the old terminals that connected to, this is one you couldn't touch, it was behind a rope, but this is an old digital terminal. This here is a Data General terminal, or actually connected to a mainframe that you can see next to it here. I took a picture of this one because I have keycaps that look just like this. They're replica Data General keycaps at home.
Nice.
And I saw the original of my keycaps and was pleased. So this here, somebody did, I don't know why they called it an abomination, did something to fix this computer. This was somebody had Linux OS as their license plate. Does anybody recognize the person on the computer screen?
I don't know.
I actually am not sure what kind of computer this is. I don't think it's a very, very, I think it might be a PC. That's Douglas Adams.
Oh, okay.
Author of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. So somebody had a picture of him there. This here, another one that I really thought was cool, is a B-Box. Are you familiar with the B-Box?
I assume it's hardware that shipped with BOS?
Correct. I believe it was a PowerPC chip inside.
Okay.
So they had that running. I thought that was cool. Here's a K-Pro.
That same monitor that everybody luggable. Owned at some point in their past, that Dell monitor.
Which Dell monitor?
That black one.
This?
That one.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Everybody had that monitor at some point in their past. Either at work or school home.
I'm sure they did.
There you go.
Yes, everybody had it. So here's another luggable. One thing that I'm actually really curious about is what is the best way to get a green CRT that you can use with today's computers? Because there are some programs that kind of emulate the look of the green CRT in a terminal window in Linux, but it's just emulating it. It's not the real look because there's something about the phosphorus in these old monochrome screens that makes the text really sharp, and it's just not replicated by an LCD screen. Yeah, I really found myself missing these old monochrome screens. And there were so many computers with the old monochrome screens on them of different kinds. Here's another one. This is an Osborne with a blue monochrome screen. All these ones recently I've shown you were all part of the regular museum. They were pointing out this TRS-80 has something that shows a display from Star Trek, the motion picture. This here is, I believe this one here is, I'm not even sure what this was. Oh, BBC Micro, popular in the UK. Here we have a picture of my first computer that I owned, a TI-99/4A. Not the best computer, to be honest, but was cheaper. This here is a Tandy. This is the PC Junior with somebody made it say hello a million times. Here's my son with a regular PC. I'm not sure what the software was there, the PCRR, but he liked it. Here is an ancient laptop that is a 286 laptop, not common, right? More TRS-80 Tandy stuff, more of the PET. We'll get to some more interesting stuff in a sec. This was another Samson I don't even recognize.
Yeah.
Here was another terminal, the ADM-3A.
Love the look of
this
it.
Was an Atari computer that came out in 91, so a late Atari. This was an HP terminal, so interacting with your thing. This, I guess I didn't get a good shot. This was one of those really giant computers. Here is another terminal. I'm not sure who made it, Triad. Now we're into something that a lot of people probably recognize as a computer they used in school. Recognize this one, Scott?
Oh, yeah. The Apple II.
Apple II. Yes.
I got one of those around here somewhere.
This was a game. This was a game on an Amiga. I took a picture so I'd remember to download it or something, called Leander. Mm-hmm. It looks really cool.
Yeah,
now, this is an interesting thing. This is Microsoft Neptune. It is a prototype version of Windows that never came out and was replaced by Windows Millennium. And you can see it has Windows Millennium branding on it. But it was a different code base. And you see, this is from 1999. They also had a Mac version of Mac OS that never came out.
Neptune
this was a whole bunch
the,
of
the first attempt at going NT for home computers, and it ended up waiting on that until Longhorn, which became XP.
So here, this place here had a whole bunch of Hackintoshes. Indeed. You will notice that these are all Windows computers, but they're all running OS X, which is pretty cool. And these are like really, really small laptops. Mm-hmm. Like they don't really make anymore, like the Libretto. So here's another shot. Here's a shot of BEOS, sort of. BEOS, which was one of my favorite operating systems of all time, mm-hmm. was an operating system that was proposed as a replacement of Mac OS and Windows by a third party called B, that was started by a former Apple person. It unfortunately didn't get anywhere. They were trying to get Apple to buy it, and Apple didn't, and they were selling their OS for like $100, and not a lot of people bought it. I personally got it though, because I thought it was awesome. I loved the look of it. It did better multitasking and multimedia than anybody else at the time. But unfortunately, because it was copyrighted, not open source, people couldn't continue it after they went out of business. But there's a group called Haiku that's kind of recreated it. And so this is actually Haiku OS that's running. And it's running on a new PC here, because this PC I don't know exactly what's in it, but this is a new PC. This case just came out last year. So very like new stuff. Here again is a Hackintosh. This is everybody's favorite. My son was impressed to see his first iMac. He'd mm-hmm. never seen an old iMac like this.
And the Bondi blue color, so, the only one that is a real yes. iMac in my opinion.
Yes. Yes. So here was something a little interesting. Somebody had an old Mac clone from Pioneer.
Nice.
And it had this special camera on it that was like one of the world's first like computer cameras, and it was color. And everything, and actually gave you like a pretty good feed. And here they had a LaserDisc player it was interacting with somehow. So that was cool.
I miss that. That was one of the cool things about LaserDisc players, is almost all of them had interfaces that you could control them remotely. We did it. I remember, God, was it middle? Must have been middle school in our programming class. We were able to control the LaserDisc player over the network, and we made a Jeopardy game where it would play questions or clips or something off of the LaserDisc. It's pretty cool.
So this was just kind of showing off the Apple Studio Display Monitor, which was one of the first LCD monitors to come out. And I remember it was like $800 or $900 for this 14-inch display, and yet mm-hmm. I really wanted one. It looks super cool. Here they were just playing other stuff. Like they had an Nintendo 64 hooked up to it. And here, of course, you see the corner of PowerBook. This was really fun, this little thing here. So they had a display all about cable television. And someone had created a cable box that still works, although I think that all the channels were actually videos that had been recorded to fake it. But mm-hmm. you remember these old boxes, right, with the buttons on them?
Of course.
So there's my son playing with it. So, like, here it was, and you actually could, like move the you see it said 1998 preview networks or whatever. I think these are all recorded. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's an Arduino microcontroller used to sense the button press. And then it uses some kind of a feed into the TV that looks like old VCR stuff. But anyway, that was a fun look back. Some old printers there, so you might imagine dot matrix and such. I'm not even really sure what this was. Here somebody was showing off Amiga emulation and Amigas. And this is like a little Amiga emulator, and this is an Amiga, and they've actually had Amiga boxes that had Raspberry Pi inside. Here is an Amiga operating system. Some of these things were running MorphOS, which I think is an Amiga emulator. anyway, here's my son checking out the world's first 1984 Mac. He was very impressed by it, but he thought it was very interesting how when you drag the windows, the outline of the window moves. Mm-hmm. And when you double click on stuff, it just looks like it's kind of exploding. Behind him here is an Apple Lisa, which folks will remember was actually the predecessor of the Mac and another GUI Apple computer. This, I think we just took a picture of, because it's a PDP-8 on a chip. Here's another printer. This one was printing out, I think this was a daisy wheel one, because it wasn't actually printing dots. It was printing with characters, printing pictures made out of ASCII. Here's a VT-105 terminal, another digital terminal. This here was an interactive computer. This person runs some kind of computer museum in, I think, where is it, Netherlands or something, and brought a couple of Philips branded computers that had come out in the 80s, which I had not seen before. Here is another terminal called a health kit, which I'd never heard of before. Heathkit.
The Heathkit.
Have you heard of these?
Heathkit was something that
I had not.
Yeah, they were sold at Radio Shack.
Were they actual computers or were they just dumb terminals?
I think they were computers.
Huh. Fascinating. So this person just had Zork running on a C64 and they had an Atari. Nothing too special. This person here was showing a lot of sort of clones of the Cosma Elf and Cosma VIP, those like hobbyist boards that they were showing. So here's one that was made with Arduino with these little keys. And he also had the original boards somewhere on here. Just crazy, all these little boards. So like here is one of the old Cosma real boards, and here's an emulator, and here's one of the original Cosma boards. These are all hobbyist things that hobbyists did. This person had a computer with Frogger on it. And did you ever have a joystick that looked like this?
I think I still do.
Yes, I had one. I definitely had a joystick like this. So another luggable computer. I'm not really sure which luggable this is. But we'll get to some. So this person was making like reproductions of the PDP-8 and PDP-10, which were like major computers with lights and switches. Let's see, back to another Tandy. Now this part to me was fascinating. Commodore 64. So this setup here was fascinating. They had South American computers. So what happened was half of the table was Brazil and half was Argentina. And the guy from Brazil told us about all these Apple II, 2 plus 2E clones that were made in Brazil only under different names. So here's one that was a 2E. And you could see the inside, the boards are very similar to an Apple board, but were made by somebody else. This one here is also, even though it says Apple II Plus, is not actually made by Apple. It's a clone. Similarly, this Kraft II Plus, you'll notice it has a numeric keypad, which I don't think any Apple II ever had. And it has Portuguese letters above some of the keys. I thought that was really interesting.
Archive.org also has had the product manual for that TK-3000.
Yeah, you could get all this. So here's a TK-2000. I think this was an Atari clone, but looks like not 100% sure. So the Argentinian guy on the other side here had something very fascinating to say. He said Argentina was a dictatorship at that time and was not allowed to import computers from the U.S. So they would get the parts from Commodore sent to them, all the parts, the keyboard, the boards, everything, and then assemble it in Argentina and sell it there. So these are Sinclair. You remember the ZX, the Sinclair, the cheapo Sinclair computers that were not great. Here he's showing me a cartridge that has like multiple cartridges in it or multiple games, because it's for an Atari clone called the Froggy Junior. The Froggy Junior, wait, here's a picture of the joystick, the Atari joystick that came with the Froggy Junior. Have you ever seen a joystick like that before?
No.
He said it doesn't have a PCB inside. It just has metal. And that when you move the joystick, it touches the metal. Sure. Both fire buttons do the same thing, he said. Here's a closer look at the Froggy Junior, which is their Atari clone, Atari 2600 clone, right?
Yeah, it is.
And the cartridges would often have... What?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. It is what?
Atari clone. That's definitely a 2600.
Yeah, it's an Atari clone. Yeah. Yeah. So these are some of the Commodore clones they had. One was called the Dream Commodore 64. And these were all sort of put together. Here's another Spectrum clone that they had. This is the Dream Commodore 64. Looks a lot like the original Commodore 64, to be fair. So these were all Argentinian computers that came out because they couldn't import from the US. Also, they needed a special video chip because they were neither NTSC nor PAL. Did I lose you, Scott?
Nope.
Okay. Sorry.
Just enjoying the show.
We're almost at the end of our exciting... Sorry. We're almost at the end of our exciting show here, but you see here, you said compact, old compact computer, uh-huh. Right? So yep. Here's the old compact luggable.
Yeah. I think that's the model I have.
You know, here you can see closer look at it. Also, there was this old Toshiba laptop. And strangely, the thing my son most wanted to see was Windows 95. He seemed to think like that this is really old and he wanted to see an old Windows running.
Sure.
Whereas for me, or Windows 98 or Windows 95 or Windows ME running, he thought were amusing.
That's an SE, right? Yeah.
Also, I'm really curious about, I remember these sort of, what would you call them? Semi laptops here from Tandy, where they had like a little tiny screen on it.
Yep.
I find those fascinating. I've never gotten to use those. Oh,
I have four of them upstairs.
You have four of them?
Uh-huh. That particular model. I have four of them upstairs.
What are they called?
They were a Model 100.
Yeah.
Let me see if I'm
correct. So.
Yep. Model 100. TRS-80 Model 100.
Yeah. So, anyway, I just had fun seeing all of those things, and I thought folks might have fun seeing them. I was particularly excited to see some of these things that never came out in America, you know, that were just made because there were, you know, a need in a foreign country to make such a thing, like the Argentinian ones, to really have folks innovate. So I thought that was really, really fascinating. There's obviously a very thriving community of people who maintain these computers. A lot of people were selling parts that you could use to kind of revamp such computers. They would even sell things that would sort of like emulate a floppy disk drive, but actually allow you to plug in a USB and things like that.
Wild. That's so crazy.
So
I love it.
There's a big retro scene, you know, lots of great old stuff. I wish I could have played with it even more, but, you know, I recommend folks look for a computer museum in their area or just go visit Scott since he sounds like he has a computer museum.
Yeah, not far off. The number of things that you showed off there, I don't have the SE, but I do have the replacement, the SE30. I've got a Lisa. I've got four of the Model 100s. I've got Commodore 64 and 128. There's an Amiga around here somewhere. the final four installation CDs, the final four versions of BOS up in the office. Also Next, which it didn't look like anybody had on display.
They did, actually. I guess I didn't get a picture of it. There was a Next Cube somewhere.
Good, because that's the reason that Apple abandoned its plans to buy BOS is because Steve Jobs came back and they bought Next, which became OS X.
Yeah. So they had that somewhere, a Next Cube somewhere. They also had Silicon Graphics workstations. I guess I didn't get any pictures of those. I should have. I tried to get a picture of everything, but maybe I missed a few. One thing I did not see that I was really hoping to see was I didn't see any Atari 400s. I would have liked, there was a whole classroom full of Atari 1200s for people to learn Atari Basic, but I didn't see any Atari 400s. I would have loved to have shown my son the crazy flat keyboard that they had, but didn't get to do that one, so... Oh, well, but lots of cool stuff.
Yeah, seems like it. I have a buddy that just did a project using Microsoft Azure for an Atari something. I don't remember which. Atari? Amiga. Atari. Yeah. we all kind of run in the same circles. Anyway, that was... As somebody who obviously does have a strangely large collection of odd things, I definitely appreciated that, because there are obviously some things in there that I don't have, a lot of things I don't have, but a number of things I didn't know existed. So that was super cool. All those clones, weird.
Yep. I have to go research more. Than I knew about.
Yeah,
a lot more clones than I knew about, for sure. So that was kind of cool. One thing that I will give as a piece of advice to the audience is, if you have old computers, don't throw them away, as I have done, because at this event, they had, like, even if they're not very vintage, also have a consignment section, where you can go and you can leave your old computers and like with a price sticker on them, and then people can come for the 3 days and buy, and your stuff is on a shelf and they can buy it and pay for it there, and then you get the money.
That's cool.
And I went into the consignment area to see what was there and to see how much they were charging for things that were kind of beat up in the consignment area. It made me really think that people must be willing to pay a lot for this stuff. Like, there was a Commodore 64 that was all dirty and beaten up, and they wanted $200 for it, right? Like, okay. They had an iMac, like a working iMac, was like $250, and a broken iMac that doesn't work was $25. So, you know, there was a lot of really old stuff and a lot of it not in great condition that people were buying. So, you know, I point that out.
I should have shipped you my case of old RAM.
Yeah, I mean, people would old components too, not just old systems, old peripherals. People, they were selling old phones and fax machines, old discs. Like, what the heck? You know, old CDs, CD-ROMs. So, yeah, there's a market for this stuff somewhere.
I've got the installer set for Novell from probably mid-90s.
Yep. So it's like my first PC, they had... My first PC that I ever owned was a Leading Edge Model D, which was like an IBM PC clone. And they had one there with the yellow monitor, and they wanted like $200 or $300 for that thing. And I was like, and it was all yellowed and gross. It wasn't even like new and clean. Like, wow, the amount of money they were charging for some pretty bad beaten up stuff. Imagine if you actually have something that's in good shape.
Yeah, right. You name your price if you got a Lisa in good shape.
Yeah, I mean, probably thousands, right?
I got one.
Yeah, if you wanted to part with it, probably make a lot of money.
No. There's the weird history of that device makes me never want to part with it.
No, I mean, it's a very important piece of computer history. I wouldn't part with it.
And a weird piece of cultural history, too, because of the oddity of the name and all the things. Lawsuits and things that came about. Yes. He named the computer after her, but he claimed that she wasn't his daughter. And, you know, all the cultural nonsense that came along with it. But that was a lot of fun, Abram. I know that's a personal thing, that event, but... obviously, you have your day job and lots of other computer stuff over there, right?
Yes. I mean, obviously, we do a lot of stuff at TomsHardware.com, but it was really fun to go, you know, to go to this. I don't think I'll get a really good article out of this because all I would be doing is just showing people my slides, although maybe it was fun. It was a lot of fun. So I recommend if you... live near a get a chance to go to a vintage computer festival. There's a VCF East and a VCF West, and those probably aren't the only vintage festivals in the world. It's a fun learning experience. I would definitely go again next year.
We may have figured out my New York trip to come visit you.
yeah, and it's 3 days, and they have like. If there are people who took this, who did a lot more than we did, like they had classes teaching you about Atari stuff. They had lectures. So, we did attend one lecture where they interviewed a guy who was one of the people who created the main, I guess, graphics chip for all the Commodore computers. So he invented the VIC-2 or something it was called chip that was used in the Commodore 64 and in, some other systems or whatever. And he told some story about how he wanted to actually create a Commodore 80 after the Commodore 64 that was going to have a built-in screen and be like what Mac and a GUI and be like what Macintosh became. But they didn't want to do it. So
that happens
anyway.
Well, very cool. I appreciate that was, again, cool stuff. Definitely appreciate it. And as always, I look forward to what we talk about next time. Yeah.